The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. Live from an abandoned storage compartment on the starship Byzantium, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it now. You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating 25 years, presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 196. This is Lewis Trapani, and joining me on this live show is James Norton, Dave A.C. Cooper, and Ken Deep makes a cameo as well. So hold on for our live show, but as usual, you know the drill. This is our live review show of The Time of Angels, episode 4 of the new series, starring Matt Smith as the Doctor. So if you have not seen this episode yet, if you have not seen this episode of Doctor Who yet, please, please do not listen any further and save this podcast until you have, because as a certain character would say, spoilers! So, without any further ado, let's go to our live show reviewing The Time of Angels. Once again, it was a packed show. We had a lot of people in the queue, a lot of people in the chat, so we did go into overtime during recording just to get everyone in the queue into the show. So, once again, this will have to be broken up into two parts, so this is the first of the two. If you would like to join us next time, we'll be doing this every Sunday, the day after it goes out on BBC One. You can join us on our live show. Go to thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net for details on that. Now let's go to our live show recorded Sunday, the 25th of April, 2010.
Hallucinogenic lipstick. She's here.
Wrong, wrong, bit right, mostly wrong. Amy, this isn't any old asteroid. It's the Delirium Archive, the final resting place of the headless monks. Also one of mine.
Oh, I see. It's how you keep score.
A home box.
What's a home box?
Like a black box on a plane, except it homes.
The lost language of the Time Lords.
There were many days these words could burn stars and raise up empires and topple gods.
What does this say?
Hello, sweetie.
Why are we doing this?
Someone on a spaceship 12,000 years ago is trying to attract my attention.
The party's over, Dr. Song.
Yet still you're on board.
I needed to see what was in your vault. This ship won't reach its destination.
777-349x10. 012/Acorn.
Oh, and I could do with an air corridor. What was that? What did she say?
Coordinates!
Woo! Doctor?
Rimmer?
Follow that ship. Use stabilizers!
What about stabilizers?
The blue switches.
Well, the blue ones don't do anything. They're just blue.
Yes, they're blue. They're the blue stabilizers. Doctor, how come she can fly the TARDIS?
You call that flying the TARDIS, ha?
I just landed her.
But it didn't make a noise.
What noise?
No, the...
It's not supposed to make that noise. You leave the brakes on.
Yeah, well, it's a brilliant noise. I love that noise. Come along, Pond.
We're on Alfalfa Metraxis, the seventh planet of the Dundra system. Oxygen-rich atmosphere, all toxins in the soft band, 11-hour day, and chances of rain later.
He thinks he's so hot when he does that.
How come you can fly the TARDIS?
Oh, I had lessons from the very best.
Well... Yeah.
It's a shame you were busy that day.
Off we go.
What are you doing?
Leaving. She's got where she wants to go. Let's go where we want to go.
Are you basically running away?
Yep.
Why?
Because she's the future. My future.
Can you run away from that?
I can run away from anything I like. Time is not the bottom.
You promised me a planet.
Amy Pond, Professor Riversong.
I'm going to be a professor someday, am I? How exciting. Spoilers. There's one survivor. There's a thing in the belly of that ship that can't ever die. Now he's listening.
You promised me an army, Dr. Song.
No, I promised you the equivalent of an army. This is the Doctor.
Has Dr. Song explained what we're dealing with?
Doctor, what do you know of the Weeping Angels?
Wow. We are all here to review The Time of Angels. And with me is Mr. James Norton across the pond. Hello, James.
Hello, Lewis.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good, mate. How are you?
You haven't seen any statues or angels, have you?
Thankfully not. That's why I'm still here.
All right. So let's not blink, and let's go to Dave A.C. Cooper, who's also with us across the pond.
It can only be one Dorothy. Join Angela and Weber as he starts his search.
You have to be quick. The torch is it keeps flashing on and off. I hope you know what that was in reference to, that little clip.
Actually, I don't.
I do. The Angela and Weber... What's it? Straight after Doctor Who.
It came over the Doctor Who.
It did. It was very annoying. It was at the moment when the cliffhanger, wasn't it? When the Doctor had the gun and was pointing it up. The scandalous moment that everybody was on about, because we'd seen it in the trailer, and how could the Doctor possibly be holding a gun, et cetera, et cetera.
So and, everyone was complaining about the Graham Norton promo. Is that what that was?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Oh. Graham Norton presents a program. What's it called? This one. It's basically
Dorothy.
It's trying to find a Dorothy for the Wizard of Oz. They're doing a stage production in the West End in I don't know how long, and they're trying to. It's a reality television program, essentially, like Pop Factor or American Idol, except. It's all to do with finding the next Dorothy for the stage production, the lead role, effectively. I thought it was very cute at the beginning, before Doctor Who, when they had a nice little sort of ident.
Was this
BBC
like one of those
Warner.
Lower third animated things?
Eventually, yeah. But in the beginning, very at the start, they had Daleks chasing sort of Graham Norton, and they had the caricatures of Matt Smith and Karen Gillan as Amy Pond and the Doctor and the TARDIS and things. That was nice. But then right at the end, they had this, as you say, this ident thing at the sort of lower third of the screen, which was really distracting. I mean, it wasn't at a particular key moment where there was lots of stuff going on screen, but even so, it's always distracting and always off-putting. And the fact
it takes you out of the show. Mm-hmm.
It does, and I hope this is something that they don't continue.
Well,
I'm sure they must know it's highly unpopular.
Those in the UK that are paying license fees, I hope you make your voices heard by the BBC.
Yes, I was thinking about writing into Points of View myself, but I've not had the chance yet, but I will.
I heard people tweeting about this, and this was, I usually try to avoid any Doctor Who-related tweets before seeing it, so I didn't know anything about it until after I actually took my red-eye flight and saw it, and the time that I saw it, it wasn't there, so it wasn't on all presentations, evidently.
Yes, thankfully. But it was certainly across my screen, and I was quite annoyed by it.
Someone tweeted that they didn't enjoy seeing Graham Harper in that episode. I'm like, not Graham Harper, Graham Norton.
Graham Norton.
And I said, he was in that episode? I don't remember seeing him at all.
reminiscent, of course, the very first episode, Rose, where his voice broke through. But I put a link in there from the BBC TV blog, which is a blog written by Stephen Moffat this time.
Yes.
About the. But virtually
it's
half
on our site
the replies.
Too.
Yeah.
Mm. What did you say? I'm sorry, I think I spoke over you, Dave.
I was going to say, about half of the replies are people being highly indignant of this.
Because
of course, it's the thin end of the wedge. If they do it and there's no protest, it could become, problem.
Yeah, it could become commonplace, which would be the
worst
thing.
Did you abuse Doctor Who in the BBC? I mean, to say it's one of their cash cows and their flagship programmes, they alter the times, they do this and that, and have it on different times, sometimes on the high definition. So,
See, they know they have a captured audience, and a big audience, so that's why...
Exactly. They know it's their flagship show. They know that people will adjust. They know that people will, whatever time it's on, will watch it, and there's going to be millions watching it. So that's why they put all these silly adverts on before and after the show to sort of promote other programmes, which I think is terrible, and the BBC should put a stop to it. It's not fair, not right to the loyal viewers, the loyal fans of the show, like ourselves, of course.
Well, we have gone on in the past about how Ken, you know, both Ken and I have gone on how we hate these lower third ads and television shows, and it's very annoying. And especially, it is even more annoying is that they do it and then they go into a commercial break in the U.S. for that same exact show. So why bother?
What was the point? Yeah. Anyway, I guess we've waxed lyrical enough about it now. Why don't we get onto the meat edge of
that. Talk about The Time of Angels. It was directed by Adam Smith, who directed The 11th Hour, and it was also written by Stephen Moffat, who also written The 11th Hour as well. And wow, and I just want to make a point, since Dave just brought it up, about Stephen Moffat had written a blog post on the BBC TV blog that debuted on Friday, the day before, and I read the first couple paragraphs and then I stopped because... potential spoilers, whatever. I just didn't want to take any chances. So I did read, like I said, the first part of it. And he did make a point saying that when you have a baddie or an alien, an adversary, rather, such as the Weeping Angels, and when you want to bring them back, you want to do something different. And he made the comparison to Alien and Aliens, and how when Aliens, the sequel to Alien, came back, they upped the ante. It was multiple aliens and whatever. So while I was watching this, I couldn't help but think of, it reminded me a bit of Aliens. You know, you had Marines and aliens, and they find themselves surrounded by, instead of just one alien, by a whole mess of aliens. And it had some echoes there. So I don't know if that was deliberately Stephen Moffat paying a little tribute there to Aliens, or it was just an influence there. So it didn't really spoil it for me, but I couldn't help but be reminded of Aliens watching this.
Mm-hmm.
But what a bravo! What a great episode! I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really Doctor Who, and it was everything that you know. I try to stay away from stuff that's going to really spoil the episode, so I go into these as much as possible with a clean slate. It was a wonderful entrance that River Song had. I mean, it was outstanding. That hallucinogenic lipstick sequence, you didn't even need to have that in the story. You could have just had, you know, you could have had just had the actor with the lipstick just pretending that he was in someplace else, but just that they took that extra step and they actually showed him in this, I don't know, park or wherever he was. It was it just was a great entrance, you know, that River Song, and how that all plays. I think they're doing that very well, how they keep on meeting, but outs, you know, but in not within the same time stream.
Yes, it was interesting as well, because we'd heard rumours quite a while ago that Mike Skinner, of the Streets fame, it's a very popular sort of garage group act here in the UK, that Mike Skinner, who is also known as the Streets, is going to appear in Doctor Who. And he was the guy in the beginning who had the hallucinogenic lipstick on his cheek.
Yeah.
It was a bit random, really. They put him in there. They could have chosen anybody, but there we go.
So I know we reported about that a while ago, and I think I asked you about who he was, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't familiar with who he was. Or who he is, right?
Yeah, very much sort of a UK act only. He hasn't really made it outside of Europe, I think. Certainly not, hasn't cracked America. But I wonder if, because they've got, at least here in the UK, he's a relatively big household name, particularly with younger people. I wonder if he's going to make another appearance, because it did seem, I liked the fact that they did that, but it did seem rather strange and rather random to have that. They could have just introduced River. They could have just panned out from the spaceship gone in and introduced, you know, River walking along with those fantastic stiletto shoes in that terrific dress.
Mm-hmm.
And what a line you might want to hold, find something to hold on to.
As I said to you on the dance floor earlier, you might want to hold on to something.
Those shoes, James. I mean, they were ruby slippers again, weren't they?
I'm sure
we've had a few. I mean, I'm sure Amy Pond has worn, in the last one, she wore these sort of leather reddish shoes. And I think the young Amy did. And I think Liz Ten did. I'm not sure about that. But as I said in the other show, are we in Kansas every time now?
Well, they had the Grand Norton.
Yeah. Oh, not in Kansas.
Looking for the new Dorothy, so it all ties in.
All nicely.
Well, this was the first story that was shot for the new series, and I have to say that it doesn't appear to be. I mean, I think Matt Smith, I know there are others that disagree with me, but I still think he nailed the part, to quote Ken. You know, I think he really is the Doctor from day one, and I think this proves it. I think, again, I know there's others that might disagree, but I thought Matt Smith was wonderful in this. I thought they were all wonderful in this. I thought it was outstanding story. I really enjoyed hearing some of the... I made a mention, last week, about in our review of Victory of the Daleks, how they got the Dalek sound effects just right, and I really enjoyed, you know, not just the control room Dalek sounds, but just the movement of the Daleks moving around the floor, that sound was just right. And once again, I was delighted to hear some familiar TARDIS sound effects inside the interior of the TARDIS, which was really brought it home for me. And hats off to Sina Moffat and the production team there for really hitting the notes just right there.
Mm-hmm.
So this, again, every time we're in these stories where it's a two-parter and reviewing the first part, it's always hard to really give a real good review of it because we've only seen the first half. So these are just some of the points I just wanted to hit on. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. I think it was a great ride once again. It kept you, took a hold of you and kept you going through the very end. It's hard to find faults in it. I'm sure there are some if you want to nitpick, but I think it was a great episode, and I really felt it was Doctor Who, and I'm very happy. So far this series is outstanding so far. And James?
Well, I concur with everything that you said, really, mate. I mean, visually, I think it was spectacular. The special effects were top-notch, and I was... You know, with the gravity globe and sort of the vast chasms and things with all the statues, I really was reminded of the Satan Pit, that two-parter.
That consistency with that glowing light, yes.
Yes. And just in terms of the, you know, it's funny now that in the olden days with the classic series, Doctor Who always used to be really sort of taken to task for the fact that they always seem to end up in a quarry. And now it seems that whenever they do go to a quarry, it's always spectacular, and they do a terrific job whenever they shoot there, like with the Satan Pit and now with the Time of Angels. I thought it was terrific. A lot of really interesting twists going on in the episodes. I love that they've given the angels sort of, as you said, they've upped the ante, Lewis. And even, I think I didn't read the article, but I saw Stephen saying something like that. I think he might have even been listening to the podcast from the Apple Store in New York in Soho, when Stephen was saying that we've brought them back, but we've made them a bit more powerful and a bit more sort of
a force to be reckoned with or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was really funny how even in that podcast he was saying, you know, how he thought that this was one of the best episodes he'd ever written, this two-parter. But he found it very difficult. It was very challenging because how do you make a chase scene with statues,
that only moving, you don't see them, you know.
Exactly, and because there's only so many times that you can make the flashlight go off and things, the torch go off. And I thought that it was very well written. My one criticism that I would have of it is that it felt very fast-paced, and that is my criticism of all of the Doctor Who so far, apart from the 11th hour of this new series.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really ought to be an hour. I struggle to follow a lot of different things, and I've not rewatched it. I want to rewatch it on iPlayer because now that I've got a taste of the flavour and seeing what was going on, I might have a better appreciation of the episode. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because it, you know, it gets you to rewatch it and so on. And I loved Riversong is always terrific, and I love the interaction between her and Amy, and sort of, you know, it's classic when companions do that old and new, when they get together and sort of, you sort of bicker a bit and talk about the Doctor and sort of all his idiosyncrasies and things like that. We saw it in school reunion with Rose and Sarah Jane, and it was fantastic to see them a bit again as well.
I thought it was better this time than when we saw her in Silence of the Library and Forest of the Dead. It's just
exactly
it seemed the chemistry or something was different this time.
Yeah, she, and I love the fact that they made the point of saying heel boy and all that sort of stuff, that the Doctor was just at River's beck and call, really, for one reason or another. And I love also that we still have this mystery about who she is and what. It's never been explained at all, as far as I can tell.
No, and it shouldn't.
Why they're there. Why they're there, what they want the angel for. I mean, what they're going to do when they get it.
Yeah.
And why are they, you know, effectively risking their lives for this angel? And I love the twist with having all of the statues, because you think that's really cool, you know, hiding the angel in a whole chasm full of the statues.
Mm-hmm.
That was very, very clever. But then the twist coming that they're, in actual fact, they're all angels. That was brilliant. The soldiers were terrific. I love the idea that the church moves on and becomes even more sort of militaristic than it is now. The lead actor, the sort of the captain, I can't remember his name, he was terrific.
Yeah.
He did a fantastic job. I mean, all the other little foot soldiers as well, I thought were played very well, but he was particularly good. And sort of the commander and bouncing off River and saying, you didn't tell him, you know, why you're really here, and sort of alluding
adding to the mystery there. See, that was the mystery that you were leading up to.
That Simon Rivers was it, playing
past
Alistair.
The Doctor's future, I think, should really be kept as, I don't think they should reveal too much of that too soon, because that's the whole thing about Doctor. You need that bit of mystery in it. And, And I think that's
And it's gone really with the Doctor now, so it's got to go over to the companions. Sorry, Dave, you were saying.
I think it was Simon Dutton. I think Alistair was the name of that chap, wasn't it?
Yeah, Alistair.
Oh, okay. The bishop, certainly Bishop Alistair. Okay, and I love the fact that they gave them the other soldiers really comical names. You know, sacred comical names like Bob. That was really fantastic stuff. Just overall terrific. I really enjoyed it. Everything seemed to feel right, and I completely agree with you and Ken Lewis that Matt Smith is perfect for the role. And I think anybody who disagrees, they still probably have an attachment to David Tennant as the Doctor, and they just need to give it a bit of time for him to get into the role. Because you always mourn a Doctor when they regenerate and they change into the next.
Yeah, especially if it's your first one that you've got attached to, and then you see them regenerate.
And particularly David Tennant, who is one of the most popular Doctors ever, if not the most popular Doctor ever. So it's been huge shoes for Matt to fill, and he's done it brilliantly from start to finish. And Stephen Moffat and Piers Wenger and all the rest of them did a spectacular job casting him, and they knew from the offset that he was for the role. And like I say, my only one minor quibble about this episode, and it is very minor, is just the pacing of it. It was too, they had to do a lot of backstory, get a lot in that 45 minutes. And I think it would have benefited.
It was under 42 again, I think.
40, yeah.
Yes. And that's for that reason, and that reason alone, I'm giving it 4.5 TARDIS groans. And I might change my opinion on that, because often with two-parters, and we've said this a lot before, mm-hmm. often with two-parters, it's better to watch mm-hmm. both before sure. giving your sort of overall review.
Of course.
So I think I'll say for now 4.5 TARDIS groans, but next week, who knows? That may well be downgraded to a 4 or bumped up to a 5. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I really enjoyed it from start to finish. Dave?
Well, Dave goes, cool. I just want to make a point about the running time. I think we made a point last week about this as well. It's probably due to overseas sales, especially in the U.S., because this way they can sell it to – and I'm not condoning it. I'd rather it be longer as well, but – I think that's the reason for it, unfortunately. You know, so
that sure, it seems that way. But, I mean, as far as I understand it, at least on BBC America, haven't they shown it in its entirety, particularly the 11th hour?
I know they did it for the 11th hour. They showed it with limited commercial interruptions, and I think they didn't cut anything out. So I think that was the case there. I don't know about last. Unfortunately, I don't get BBC America, so I don't get first.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would prefer it if they – I wouldn't mind if I lived in the States, wherever, if it was an hour and a half or an hour and a quarter or something. You know, I wouldn't mind that. I'd rather they showed it in its entirety and the pacing felt good. And it could be like a little film then, if you like, particularly with a two-parter like this. But it just felt so right from start to finish. It felt like proper Doctor Who, and each episode, it seems, has been – getting better and better, and this so far, I'm hugely fond of the 11th hour, but this so far has been the best episode, I think.
Yeah,
Dave.
Well, first of all, I'll put it on a par with the first one. Just let me say that the Hobbit in the chat room corrected me that Liz was wearing dark book boots, not red ones. So thank you for that.
Okay.
I mean, Stephen Moffat has said, I think, again, not in the show, but one of the confidentials, you know, not all statues are angels, but any statue could be an angel. Now, they did cheat a little bit in that because, of course, they didn't have their eyes covered. So there was a bit of misdirection there, because one would have thought they would have been frozen into permanent statues with not having their eyes covered. Because when we first went in, we knew that we were looking for one angel, as we thought, and we knew that that would be the one that would have its eyes covered up. But
weren't these statues eroded so much that their eyes were missing?
Right, so
I didn't why they were eroded and what that was to do with.
Well, at least 5,000 years had gone by, because he said that it had become a colony planet. Because one of the other urgencies that, if you sort of didn't listen carefully, was the fact that it's not just a planet where there's no risk to life. There were 6 billion people living on this planet.
Sure, 6 million colonists now. Six billion.
Yeah, 6 billion, sorry, yeah. You almost wonder if River Songs are sort of... it's harking back to the days of Turlough, isn't it, in terms of having a companion that's not necessarily, maybe... Well, she's not a full companion yet, although she has now been in the TARDIS. But obviously the way she operated the TARDIS, River Song, she at some point will take a few journeys in... You know, she won't... At first, I think, now and again she'll summon him and he'll go, and then we'll find out. But obviously, she must have flown on some missions, if that's the correct word, with him.
And who taught him?
Yeah. No, not him, no, because you said...
Yeah,
he said
that must be someone else that could fly the TARDIS taught her.
Maybe a future doctor. Yeah, and the only one note of caution I had was the fact that, I mean, we're already very shortly into the series, but he's used this same trick of, the alien doesn't have a voice, like with the Vasta Narada, or what they're called.
Yeah,
they use the dead bodies. Here again, he's, they're using the dead body to communicate, which I suppose is justifiable, given the fact that the angels, and he stated quite clearly, the angels don't have a voice. So we don't really know how they communicate with one another, whether they're telepathic or whatever, because, of course, in Blink, there were 4 of them. They all converged on the TARDIS, so they must have some way of communicating. Neither of you said it, and I didn't notice it, and I'm sure I don't want to take words out of people's mouths coming along. But we kept saying, why do they keep rubbing our noses in the crack? They make it dead obvious. well, apparently the crack was in this one, and I never noticed it. So I'm going to have to eat my words on that one.
Was it in this one? I know, obviously it was in the trailer. Yeah. It was in the promo for next episode. Was it in this
part? It was, yeah.
It was? Where?
No, it was in the promo.
I knew that, but I didn't see it in the episode.
But Dave said it was in the episode.
I believe so. I think Tim T. Jury said it was. I think he said it was on the TV screen behind the angel, but the one that was on video. But somebody, I'm sure, will correct me on that because I usually make a mistake or two. And we assumed, of course, that it was an escaped prisoner, but it looked as though she had a deal with this chap. This Trevor Alistair chap looks as though they have other issues going on because he warns her not to let the doctor to guess. So that's another little nice mystery. But it was. I think you nailed it right at the beginning, Lewis. You know, we're into stories proper now. We've had the setup stories, and now we can just get on with the adventure. And again, I don't want to put words in other people's mouth, but I'm sure people had a higher opinion of this. Certainly of Episode 2 and maybe 3. So I think it's gone. I would put it up with the first one. Maybe I think I enjoyed the first one more. But of course, that was a 1 hour, four-minute episode. So I would say 4.5.
Again, once you've seen the second part, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah, but I'm aware that you'll probably, with the great audience here, want to get fairly quickly. I don't really want to play a clip, but then fairly quickly.
Yeah, no, I will. Another interesting point about River Song is that they have all these future adventures still in store, and she makes a point, is this still early on for you? And it implies that she has all these faces and of him in that book and all that. It sort of implies that, you know, that the Doctor goes on well beyond 12 generations. Because she seems to have this... She seems to know multiple doctors, yet we know that it was the 10th doctor's in his, that was, you know, David Tennant's 10th doctor. It was in his timeline that he first encounters her.
Hello, wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah. Well, one assumes the story of the Byzantium that she already had written in a story in Silence in the Library actually wasn't written in the book now, because she's only now experiencing it. So after this event,
this takes place before in her timeline. This takes place before. Well, obviously, because she expires.
But she's dead.
All right. Well, let's. Thank you once again, Dave, for putting these clips together.
Thank you. Yes. Would you rate it, sir? Did you already give a rating?
Well, the episode one, I put a smidgen under 5, so I think this is 4.5, definitely.
Yeah, okay. Before you carry on, guys, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, do what I did last week. I've got to be up very early in the morning, sadly.
Okay.
Thank you ever so much for having me on, of course.
Well,
and I'll really look forward to listening to everybody else's opinions later on, because I promise you, I do listen back to what people... People say on the podcast.
At that point, I just want to make a mention, those that are listening to the live show live, you may also want to listen to when they go out on our feeds, because those that send in feedback after the show is over via our feedback, you know, email address or the Podshock public call box, get into the show that way. So there's a couple other, like Tin Dog, Michael from the Tin Dog podcast, his feedback is in 195, as well as another person. So, you know, just giving you a heads up on that. So thank you once again, James. Right. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Lewis. Sorry to bar, but maybe next time, if I'll try and sit through the full session, because that's going to be really interesting hearing people's opinion.
We're going to tie you up, James, so you can't go away.
Indeed. All right, gentlemen. Thank you ever so much, and I'll speak to you next week, if not before.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Ta-ra.
A weeping angel, Amy, is the deadliest, most powerful, most malevolent life form evolution has ever produced. And right now, one of them is trapped inside that wreckage, and I'm supposed to climb in after it with a screwdriver and a torch. And assuming I survived the radiation long enough, and assuming the whole ship doesn't just blow up in my face, do something incredibly clever, which I haven't actually thought of yet. That's my day. That's what I'm up to. Any questions?
Is River Song your wife?
It's from the security cameras in the Byzantium vault. I ripped it when I was on board. 4 seconds, I put it on loop.
Yeah, it's an angel.
You've encountered the angels before.
Once on Earth a long time ago, but those were scavengers barely surviving.
The Weeping Angels can only move if they're unseen.
And it's a quantum lock. In the sight of any living creature, the angels literally cease to exist. They're just stone, the ultimate defence mechanism.
In fact, that whole ship's going to be flooded with dry burn radiation, in fact, electrons and gravity storms, deadly to almost any living thing.
Deadly to an angel?
Dinner to an angel. The longer we leave it there, the stronger it will grow. Who built that temple? Are they still around?
The Aplans, indigenous life form, died out 400 years ago.
200 years later, the planet was terraformed. Currently, there are 6 billion human colonists.
Ooh, you lot, you're everywhere. You're like rabbits!
But you're just a recording. You can't move.
Doctor!
This whole book is a warning about the Weeping Angels, so why no pictures? Why not show us what to look out for?
There was that bit about images. What was that?
Yes.
An image of an angel becomes itself an angel.
Doctor, he's coming out of the television. The angel is here.
Don't take your eyes off it. Keep looking. It can't move if you're looking. It's time it moves, it'll move faster. Don't even blink.
I'm not blinking. Have you ever tried not blinking?
Amy, not the eyes. Look at the angel, but don't look at the eyes.
Why?
What is it?
The eyes are not the windows of the soul, they are the doors.
Was it? There was a sort of blip on the tape and I froze it on the blip.
It's no longer dormant.
Stone angel on the loose amongst stone statues. Check every single statue in this chamber. He doesn't know yet, does he? Who and what you are.
It's too early in his time stream.
Well, make sure he doesn't work it out, or he's not going to help us.
I won't let you down. Believe you me, I have no intention of going back to prison.
Who's there? Is someone there? Angela! Angela!
According to the Doctor, we are facing an enemy of unknowable power and infinite evil, so it would be good. It would be very good if we could all remain calm in the presence of Dacor.
Isn't there a chance this lot's just going to collapse? There's a whole ship up there.
Incredible builders, the Aplans.
Had dinner with our chief architect.
What? Two heads are better than one.
What, you mean you helped him?
No, I mean he had two heads. That book, the very end, what did it say?
What if we had ideas that could think for themselves? What if one day our dreams no longer needed us? When these things occur and are held to be true, the time will be upon us. The time of angels.
Very good, wow. Well, thank you again, Dave. We're going to go to our callers now. Once again, you can call us live during our, well, hopefully live, if unless you're an angel and you're using someone else's voice to call us. But you can call us during while we're doing the live show at area code 724-444-7444. And our call ID number for the show is 23358. And that's Dr. Who Podchuck live. So we encourage you to call. And if you, we also encourage you to become a TalkShoe member. It's free. And the reason why we do that is so that you can put yourself in the queue. And we know you want to participate in the show, you know, by putting yourself in the queue. Well, we have a couple call-ins right now, or did. We have at least one now that's not in the queue, I don't think. Oh, well, no, they're a member, too. They're, all right. There was a couple before that I saw that were just phone-only, which I was going to try to chime in to see if they wanted to participate. But let's get to the people in the queue right now. Once again, Doctor Who Podchuck supporting... mouth malfunction. Doctor Who Podchuck...
Try another head.
Try another mouth. So Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue. So one of the advantages of being a subscriber, and if you're not, please go to our website, gallifreyandembassy.org or podchuck.net, and see the banner there and learn how you can become one. And we can't do the show without you, so much thanks to all our supporters. So to that, let's go to Helen. Hello, Helen. Welcome back to the show.
Hey. Hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Girls? I'm doing very well since last week. I had my operation on Friday.
I was going to ask how everything went.
Oh, everything was spectacular. Like, I was really amazed. I mean, I thought I'd be in a lot more pain right now than I am, which is absolutely none. So
fantastic.
Yeah, so anyway, I find out Monday about the results of the biopsy, but hopefully that'll turn out benign because the doctor said everything looks so clean in there that that we must have either must be very, very early or none at all.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Yeah, so I was really relieved to hear that.
Yeah.
And I didn't regenerate afterwards.
And you didn't blink either.
Oh.
I didn't blink. No, I didn't blink at all. Anyway, yes, I like to say I really enjoyed this episode very, very much. But I have a theory that River Song has a lot more to do with Doctor than just the theories that they might be married.
Well, I think there's more to it than that. I don't think it's going to be that simple.
Yeah.
And
oh, of course not. I feel like that. I mean, she knows the High Gallifreyan, and she knows how to pilot the TARDIS better than the Doctor does. I love the blue switches. I mean, it's better than the big red button. I mean, you have either the big red button or the blue switches, and I thought that was so cool. But I thought Amy's scene in the ship with the video screen mm-hmm. was really eerie. You know, I mean, oh, don't look at the AIs and the fact that we had that little Fire of Pompeii type thing with the hand turning into stone. And this time she was just imagining it, not actually happening.
Which of course, the same actress.
Oh, yeah. And I heard that Matt actually bit Karen in that scene.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny. I was like.
So her reaction was real, yeah. Though the first time seeing it, I didn't really realize that's what he did. You know, it was the second time it was more obvious for me. But yeah.
But I liked the return of the Crusades. You know, with the clerics being in the actual military, and they said, I don't subscribe to that particular church." So I thought, yeah, there were a couple of really good saint lines in there. No, we didn't have anything to say about this episode. I mean, it was just a classic. I liked what happened, what other people have said, where they, I watched a Doctor Who episode. I wasn't concentrating on, was Matt acting like the Doctor, or it was the other characters interacting with each other right. It was just sat down and enjoyed it and said, you know, this is classic Doctor Who. I really can't rate it yet because it's only the first part of the two-parter, but so far, you know, I give it a 5 out of 5 because mm-hmm. It was that good. But I like the fact that I'm not sure if they used the same cave that they used in Christmas Invasion and other episodes that they've had caves used in. I think I heard mention that they did use that cave, but I wasn't sure if that was in this
episode.
In
the Confidential, they show them going to an actual cave where I forget the name of the where it is. I don't know if Dave remembers, but they went to...
It's near Cardiff. Yeah. I know it's in Wales, near Cardiff, that they have this cavern.
Ian says clearly.
The statues in there were angels, and that they were almost completely drained, and they're all worn, and I bet some of them had even turned into sand already, so I like there might have been even more of them. A lot of them had already disintegrated.
So that makes a point, what she said, what River Song said, that they can't die. Evidently, maybe they can.
I guess so. Because, if you don't get energy and you're just sitting there for a long enough period of time, you know, weather and wear will get to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, a fantastic episode. I was really not disappointed by River Song or anything, except the fact that she said that she didn't want to go back to prison. That was a pretty good hint right there. And the fact that she hangs out with these cleric soldiers.
Yeah, well, you can't read too much into that. I mean, after all, even the Doctor has been in prison many times. So, I mean,
oh, that's true. That's true.
After all, he did steal a TARDIS.
He did, but
and he was also president of Gallifrey too. So they're all
everybody
crooks.
From his class, I think, stole the TARDIS. I think. I mean, we have the Ronnie, the Master, the meddling monk.
Yeah.
Who else? I mean, I could name like a whole bunch of other renegade Time Lords who have TARDISes.
But how do you think the story sets up now for next week, Ron?
Oh, I think it's really going to stand up next week. You know. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm real excited about seeing it. Like I said, all in all, 5 out of 5 for this one. And, I just want to bring up another point. Unrelated to this particular episode, but on the BBC America last night, Beast Below, they showed AT&T Universe screwed up on the scheduling. So my DVR for the premiere episode at 9 o'clock only got the last half hour.
Uh-huh.
I was a little ticked off at them for doing that, and then, but thankfully they fixed it for the second airing.
I was just going to say,
after the Hallmark show. What?
No, I was just going to make a point that I think they did have a repeat broadcast as well. So
they did. They did have the after the Graham Norton show. They and the second showing of the 11th Hour. They showed it again, and that time I was able to get the whole episode. So thank goodness. It was just very annoying that they messed up. They thought that they were showing the full version of 11th Hour again for some odd reason. So they had it scheduled on AT&T site for that hour and a half.
Hopefully people have caught the whole thing, you know, those that have missed out.
Yeah, I think that if they got it on other services, they probably didn't have any trouble with the premiere at 9. It was an AT&T-U-verse that screwed up. So, but like I said, they probably got a lot of zillion phone calls, and they fixed it.
All right, well, thank you, Helen. We got more people in the queue, so I want to get to others.
Okay, well, I look forward to Anthony's comments.
Okay. Thanks again. Cheers.
Yep. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
All right, now we're going to Anthony and Jesse. Hello.
Hey there, Lewis. How are you doing today?
Very good. How about yourselves?
All right, we're doing well. Jesse's here. Just to start out, it's great hearing that Helen's back to, you know, on the mend with everything that's going on with her. So great to hear.
Absolutely.
That. Definitely. So Jesse's got a bunch of thoughts, and she's raring to go. So she wrote some notes while she was ironing her clothes for work tomorrow. So I'm going to turn her over. I've been on the last few shows talking with you guys, so I'm going to turn it over to Jess and let her have a go at it.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi. Welcome back.
Hi.
A few things. I sort of, some of the other comments that were made, I think James said it, and Lewis, I think you mentioned it, the idea of some folks that are still sort of, you know, grieving for David Tennant, that this is, Matt Smith is, you know, he's really coming into his own. I'm one of those folks, but I like what he's done with the Doctor from the beginning. The one thing that sort of was a little disappointing was Moffat. I don't know, I expected a little more from him and the other stories, and this story gave it to me. I really, this is the writing and what I really have liked about what his stories in the past. And it's not just the darker aspect, it's just, you know, the entire package. I didn't really have any moments that I was getting a little irritated with, like the, you know, there's no bubbles around spaceships and things like that. The thing that I was really excited about, not just with River Song, but, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of the essay that I wrote for our book where I deal with the Valkyrie, that there was one element that it was I wrote about River. And one of the elements of the Valkyrie is attached to the air. And, you know, I was kind of arguing that it's this idea of traveling in space and time. But the opening scene of this, it was that one element, because Valkyries sort of, they fly or they ride in the air. And she's actually, you know, literally doing it. So I was really, you know, excited about that. But somebody else mentioned the idea of the ruby slippers.
Yeah.
And that plays in. I mean, I was talking with Anthony and saying I want to get my essay to Stephen Moffat. I want him to read it at some point. I don't want to review. I just want to, you know, send it to him, because there are so many elements that it's almost, how can they, this is being done on purpose. The slippers, the color scheme, it's not a coincidence that Amy and River Song are wearing the same colors. They're wearing red and black. And those are very, those are colors that are associated with sort of a mythological, it's associated with the Valkyrie, it's associated with goddesses and all these very strong, you know, he could have put them in any other color. But there's a constant theme of red and black. The references to River Song having sort of a history, you know, prison, thing with the lipstick, it's sort of showing a darker, you know, element to her, that when we met her earlier, we meet her actually later in her timeline. So my sense was sort of like, you know, because she says, oh, I've become a professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's that kind of, like, this is maybe prior to she, you know, before she got her life on track. We don't know what she was doing, why she was in prison. And the other sense I had, there was a book that, for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of it. I read it in high school. and it was a science fiction. It was a dystopia where dealing with the three estates of the clergy, aristocracy, and warrior class, that the church has, it's like sort of after an apocalypse, the church takes over everything. They become the government, they become the ruling class, they become the warriors. If I can figure out the name of this book, I have to wonder if Moffat, you know, was sort of thinking of that, sort of an homage to that, because the soldiers, and it was very similar in the book, the way they referred to themselves, you know, instead of calling them, you know, captain, private, whatnot, it was bishop, cardinal, you know, cleric, and on. You know, that was an interesting, another interesting thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Anthony was kind of making a point. I don't know if you want to talk about the idea that you had with the crack and all that stuff.
Well, you say, Jesse and I were talking, and it goes back to, these are the repercussions, in my opinion. I mean, perhaps later on will be proved wrong until we see the very end of it. But perhaps we're seeing the repercussions of the decisions the 10th Doctor made. For instance, Liz 10 prior, he went and cream breast, you know, and we see Liz 10. So I'm wondering if at the end there will be some sort of final, I don't know, these are repercussions. We're seeing the effects of the end of time, the events in the end of time, and the stuff that he did post-Waters of Mars. We have no idea what he did. You know, he cited a few things when he went to the planet of the Ood and, you know, shock value type things, but we don't know all the things that he's done. And there's certain things that are up here that are going on, and that I think at the end of this, the cracks are the cracks in time of all those events and the Time Lords being shut back away. Will we see the Time Lords again at the end of this? I don't know. Sort of like, you know, them coming into the end of the War Games, of the Second Doctor story, you know, and taking upon themselves to do certain things. I don't know if it'll be an act like that. I don't know. Unless we find out that River is one as well, because she's writing, she's a Time Lord or something to that effect, because she's writing High Gallifrey Knows How to Follow the TARDIS and all these different things. And her reference to the Doctor when she, you know, he thinks it's him that teaches her how to fly, but she says, sorry, you weren't there, or something, you know, a comment like that. I think these are repercussions of what's happening. There's certain things that he doesn't get quite right away. You know, Amy's doing sort of, you get the companion doing certain actions and events that sort of clear up a situation or resolve a situation or provide an answer to the situation. Am I right? I don't know. We can only theorize up until then. But do you have anything else to say, Jess? I'd say 4.5 on it, or if not, teetering on 5 for the whole story. We'll have to see how it played out next week as well, because we see in the end trailer the crack, and there's a little bit more examination on that. So I think we're going to be halfway somewhat through the season, the series, 13 stories, so I think they're going to start bumping it up a little bit more. So I think that's what we got for today.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. We'll have to wait and see for next week.
Exactly. So thanks again, Lewis. Thanks, Dave, and everyone else for having
Cheers.
Us on today.
Cheers. All right. We think we have Ken on board. Let's just make sure. Is this you, Ken?
Hello.
Hey.
Sorry to be joining you so late. I only have a couple of minutes, which probably works out very well for all the people waiting in the queue. So I haven't heard what anybody has said in the last hour, so please forgive me if I'm repeating anything. Whatever is new will be new, and whatever is old will be old, but I'll keep it really short. The 5 TARDIS grown story for me right off the bat, this is everything I love in Doctor Who, all wrapped up in one. Story is a touch of a Doctor Who version of aliens, troops, except that they're religious, or so we think. They're put into a situation where they're forced to defend themselves. Where we had a small bunch of angels, or the angels were originally stranded on Earth and they were weakened, or whatever they were. Suddenly now we're seeing the full brunt of the angels and their powers, and it's just a lot of fun. Just a great fun episode. Rolls by very quickly. Makes you excited to see next week's episode. Anybody who had any doubts about Moffat coming in, this is pure Stephen Moffat, and it's just a fun Doctor Who episode. probably the best of the what we've seen so far, and in my opinion, it's the best thing we've seen since probably Silence in the Library or Midnight or one of those stories. I liked Waters of Mars a lot last year, but with that exception, I would probably say this is the best thing I've seen in Doctor Who in a good 2 years.
Ken, I quoted your quote earlier about Matt Smith nailing it, and I think this was the first episode, the first story that was shot.
Oh,
and I think right out of the ballpark, the gate, he nailed it, and I think there's no question.
So many wonderful little moments, and I'm not going to sit and detail them all, but there's so many little moments in it that just work and work very well, and he is very doctorly, right down to the whole the blue button thing. You know, that's Doctor Who. That's any actor who plays the Doctor. That scene and the way he portrays it is Doctor Who, and so you really can't. It's tough to nitpick, and it's tough to just say he didn't like it. I just enjoyed it. Period. What else is there to say? I can sit and try to tear it down if I want, but why not just enjoy it? And that's the way I feel about it. And I to add, Anthony was just saying though. To throw a quick curveball I hadn't thought of till he had mentioned it. What if the woman in End of Time is River Song?
Mm.
Being that he's kind of alluded to, perhaps she was Gallifreyan. Perhaps she is Gallifreyan or a Time Lady. Something along those lines, because you have the knowledge of flying the TARDIS. She speaks, she reads Old High Gallifreyan. She writes Old High Gallifreyan. They've definitely added new dimensions. And for those who might think of the Doctor having a wife as a controversy, at some point he has a granddaughter. So to me, that's not a controversy. Half human is a controversy. Having a wife is not a controversy in Doctor Who history. I actually find it easier that the Doctor has a wife than I do having parents, as it was originally going to be alluded to in the 96 movie. I think it's better when the Doctor's history and lineage is a mystery. It's one thing when he exists to find a wife or to find someone who he finds a close companion. That's fine. But the actual person itself always has to be a mystery, his history and what he's steeped in. I actually find it better that the woman in white would be his wife and not his mother. Then that suddenly works for me.
It's more likely that a mother's going to keep a scrapbook, though, isn't it? She could easily be the mother.
Yeah, I doubt River Song's a mother, though. That would be really creepy.
It's a bit too cool for that.
We're a little bit creepy, a little too, you boys don't look like you're from around here. Just a strange, strange thing. But hey, they're Time Lords. Perhaps she's actually a man. As we've already discussed, the Doctor could eventually regenerate into a woman. Why couldn't River Song actually be a man that regenerated into a woman? It's all possible. Strange, very strange, but possible.
Well, I think there's a lot of mystery around it, and I don't, you know, it could be a lot more complicated than a simple wife, or, you know, as River said, we're not saying you're right, we're not saying you're wrong.
I'm glad there's a mystery that doesn't involve a soothsayer.
Yes.
Or a potion. It's a mystery that involves a storyline.
Yeah, well, I had mentioned that earlier, that we need more mystery back in Doctor Who, and I think this is a perfect way of injecting that back in. And I hope it's not revealed too soon. You know, I want to keep this mystery going and just add more layers to it. And, you know.
Well, I think we're going to find out some information about the crack, but I don't think we're done with that. I think that's going to carry us straight through.
Yeah, that's going to bring us to the series finale.
Over here. Yeah. Love the design, the production design on this story as well, giving the monks or the whatever we're going to call them, the troops, very contemporary army uniforms. And I love the production design on a rocket ship, just a plain old-fashioned rocket ship. Love it, love it, love it.
Mm. All right. Well,
anyway, that's my take, 5 out of 5, and I'm really looking forward to next week. I just plain old enjoyed it. And I guess I'll talk to everybody this time next week.
Yeah, I gave it 5 out of 5 as well earlier. And I believe James did as well.
4.5.
Was it 4.5? Yeah, I think it was 4.5. Only because James was disappointed about how short the episode was. Again, I think they're doing this for overseas market reasons, you know, keeping it under 42 minutes. But I think that was his major complaint.
I love it. And in particular, that this is a two-parter, because when they're combined, if they're 80 minutes, that's pretty close to a good old-fashioned four-parter. So I don't really have too much of a problem. I like the fact that it moves quickly. At no point does it drag. Why is that a negative?
Well, it does.
Sorry.
It does move.
I had a lot of caffeine today, Lewis.
Light and shade people want, don't they? You know, slow moments, but quiet moments.
There's other people who want to say their piece, and we can always go on and on about this. So I'm going to bow out, and I'll see everybody next week.
All right. Well, thank you, Ken.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Bye.
Well, with that, we're going to conclude part one of our review of The Time of Angels. Come back with Doctor Who Podchuck 197 for the conclusion, now that we've heard from the Doctor Who Podchuck hosts, as well as including Dave and our Podchuck supporting subscribers. If you'd like to become a Podchuck supporting subscriber yourself, once again, you'll be moved up in the queue if you call in on our live show. You can learn how to become a Podchuck supporting subscriber by going to our website, thegallifreyanimacy.org or podchuck.net. For a low monthly subscription fee, as a show of support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll also get extra content as well. So become a Podchuck supporting subscriber today. And if you already are one, we thank you for your continued support. We could not do the show without you. Also, there's a lot that goes on our website in between podcasts, so be sure to check us out at gallifreyanimacy.org or podchuck.net, whichever one is easier for you to remember. There's news, information, blog postings, and a very active community with our forums there, so check that out. You can also follow us all individually on Twitter. You can follow Dr. Who Podchuck at twitter.com/podchuck. You can follow myself at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. You can follow James at twitter.com/JamesNorton. You can follow Ken at twitter.com/KenDeep, and you can follow Dave Cooper at twitter.com/DaveAC. So, until next time, cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podchuck, presented by the fan-run GallifreyAnimacy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podchuck is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. You can email us at feedback@podchuck.net. Doctor Who Podchuck theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
There were many days these words could burn stars and raise up empires and topple gods.
What does this say?
Hello, sweetie.